The symbiotic relationship between technologists and government regulators always involves a delicate dance. Beginning with 5G, and certainly continuing with 6G, governments around the world are taking a keener interest in wireless communications technology development than ever before. Is that a good thing? A bad thing? Both? Fasten your seatbelts and get ready to find out in this episode of All Things 5G. Hello, my name is Dylan McGrath, and this is All Things 5G, the monthly podcast that takes a deep dive into the business, technology, and policy issues surrounding 5G. I'm joined here by my colleague at Keysight Technologies, Aaron Lee. Aaron is pinch hitting for Jesse Cavazos, the regular co-host of All Things 5G. Aaron, hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dylan. Before we go any further, a reminder to please visit the All Things 5G website at www.keysight.com/find/AllThings5G. There you can browse previous episodes, access additional resources, and register to receive alerts about new episodes, and have chance to get some cool All Things 5G swag.
And please, please remember to subscribe to All Things 5G on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, this episode is focused on 6G and will serve as a preview for some discussions that will take place at IEEE's Wireless Communication and Network Conference, which is conveniently abbreviated as WCNC.
That's right. We are recording this just a few days before the kickoff of WCNC 2022. And to give us a quick snapshot of what will be happening at this year's conference, we are bringing in yet another colleague, Ben Coffin. Ben, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. Good to be here.
Hi, Ben. The tagline of the conference is boosting verticals into wireless orbit. What are kind of the big topics and themes of the conference?
Well, Aaron, first, if our listeners have never been to an IEEE Communications Society show before, the attendees are primarily made up of the research community. So that's university professors and researchers, government agency researchers, and industry labs that are leading the charge on cutting-edge research. We're going to be hearing a lot about 6G ideas, a lot focused on how we need to collaborate to get to 6G, how sustainability will fit into this space, what new spectrum we should be going after, new physical layers that we may want to utilize, even how the metaverse might get involved. We'll, of course, continue to hear how 5G and O-RAN are evolving and how we can enhance 5G to get us to the 6G transition. You know, there's still a lot of work to go down between generations, and there's still a ways to go. But this crowd is very future-looking, so don't be intimidated by how far out they're looking.
Okay, I see that in the program, yourself are scheduled to give a talk on testing the RIC on April 12th, and Kailash Narayanan, president of Keysight's Communication Solution Group, is delivering a keynote on April 13th. Can you tell us a little more what you are going to talk about at this event in the program that you think are particularly appealing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be giving a talk essentially on the idea of what an app store for Open RAN networks could look like and what that type of an open marketplace would be. We want to encourage that new vendors are engaging in the O-RAN ecosystem, but there's a lot of testing and confidence building that has to happen between entering the space and being picked up by a tier one operator. There's also going to be a panel put on by our own Sarah LaSelva, a previous guest of All Things 5G, talking to some of the leading advanced wireless researchers in Texas. Texas has become a hotspot for telecom activity, and there are a lot of universities and companies putting an emphasis on advanced wireless here. And of course, can't forget the keynote from Kailash, our SVP and president of our Communication Solutions Group, where he'll be talking about three of the pivotal trends transforming the network that represent a massive evolution to the wireless business.
And of course, Ben, since you clearly have a voice that was made for podcasting, we at All Things 5G are also putting you to work on the show floor. Can you talk a little bit about what you will be doing and maybe get our audience excited about the episode that they will have to look forward to as a result?
Absolutely, yeah. So I will be the boots on the ground at the show as an Austin local. I'm going to be interviewing the researchers to get their insight on what 6G means to them, how their work's going to impact that transition. I'm going to be looking out for academic researchers, industry thought leaders, and try and get a diverse set of perspectives to give our listeners an insight of where the wireless research community sees hurdles and what the exciting prospects are. It should be a really good episode.
Yes, it should. And we're looking forward to it. But for now, let's turn our attention to one of the prominent themes at WCNC, the relationship between governments and industry in the development of 6G technology. We're coming right back with Keysight's Roger Nichols and Raymond Shen. Okay, we are back, and we are joined now by Roger Nichols, the head of the 6G program office at Keysight. He's our returning champion and a frequent guest on the All Things 5G program. Thanks, Roger, for being part of it.
Thank you, Dylan.
And we also have Raymond Shen, who's the director of 5G and 6G government solutions at Keysight. Raymond, thank you very much for joining us on the All Things 5G podcast.
Good to be here.
Governments have taken a much bigger interest in 5G than they did in previous generations of cellular communications technology. What about 6G? What is the relationship between industry and government as it pertains to 6G?
Well, Dylan, I'll start with that one because I've talked about this one quite a bit. Yes, government involvement in 5G, you know, they really started paying attention a lot more, and that's nowhere more evidence than here in the U.S. Congress is involved and so forth. 6G, even more so. There are two bills in Senate committee right now in the U.S. government directly related to 6G. And we see most nations that are known for their development work in communications with national entities that are consortia that are sponsored or closely associated with government working on 6G as the next generation. And I think this is because communications and mobile communications are more and more an essential part of national security, national identity, and obviously a major part of their use in society.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen governments not only interested in, but also funding and spearheading 5G and 6G work. So yes, in the United States, government is really trying to advance 5G, but also abroad, I've seen this for 5G. And also already for 6G, which really blows my mind, but that yes, 6G is already being funded and worked on. I think the reasons for doing so are to take an early leadership in the next generation of communications and also spur in-country innovation and growth while also being able to take advantage of these new technologies for in-country military and defense. Commercial companies will have their own future-looking research groups working on 6G, or for that matter, next G, but the governments are seeding early innovation at a more macro level.
So how would you describe the role of governments in 6G at this point?
Actually, Raymond touched on that a little bit. One is just funding, right? A lot of governments will do funding of research with earmarked dollars for various technologies. And it's kind of why I called out the U.S. in that last statement I made, which is previous to 5G, the U.S. government, National Science Foundation, and other entities did very little budgeting and earmarking dollars for the sake of communications research. And that's really because it was in the hands of industry, largely with the laissez-faire approach that we have. Not somewhat unique because other governments are sponsoring more in 6G research, but that's really become more amped up in the 6G space. And you see most governments leaning in pretty heavily. In some cases, they've made very public announcements about how much money is being invested, and typically in the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of several years to really enable the research community to iron out what the technologies are. So that's one area. The other one is in policy, the most obvious being spectrum policy, because you know that's a pretty critical resource that we have. And there's plenty of work that goes on in terms of setting spectrum policy, but there's less obvious areas in policy related to, for example, electromagnetic field exposure, related to cell site placement and regulation in terms of cell site placement. And then also regulatory issues relating to the cellular service providers themselves, how they're taxed, how they're required to compete. You know, pretty obvious example is the United States has maybe four major cellular service providers and about 320 million people. Europe has about 400 million people and something like 70 service providers. And so a very, very different circumstances in terms of how policy impacts what happens with the rollout of these technologies. And I think the last one I'll probably have Raymond talk about this, which is the direct engagement of departments of defense now in using and promoting these technologies.
Yeah, you know, globally, I've seen governments and government labs publish 6G vision papers that are technical in nature, that are very and are very compelling and lay the foundation for technological direction and guide what areas funding should go in. So I think it's very interesting that it's not just about funding, but also technology. And here in the United States, I've seen our government and our defense call out specific use cases that end up being priorities to work on and that push the envelope on technology development. So governments here and abroad have now taken an active approach to shaping the direction of innovation and technology. And furthermore, to bring about this innovation, government funding has brought the combination of government labs with industry and academic institutions to perform basic research and implement innovations that fulfill government's vision and use cases. I just wanted to also note that Keysight is hosting a very interesting panel discussion at WCNC conference, and there we'll have brought some of the top research professors in the Texas universities, and each of them will share their research and vision, focusing on the future of wireless and of 6G. And they'll also talk about how they see industry and academics collaborating.
What do you guys expect to be the hot use cases for 6G, especially from a government perspective?
Sure. You know, starting in 5G, when they started to investigate these two areas that I'm going to talk about, I thought that this was a great hot use case or use cases, but I think that it's going to extend into 6G. So the two areas are non-terrestrial networks and device-to-device communications. I think these are the two major innovations that governments and defense could really use. There's something about having a network that could be used by ships in the middle of an ocean or on mountains or in rugged terrain or areas with either denied or downed communications or no communications, whether it's on the battlefield or in some kind of first responder situation, you know, maybe an earthquake has taken down the communications, using a satellite for communications, or in the case of device-to-device communications, an odd ad hoc mesh network would be really advantageous. So, you know, for the ad hoc mesh communications, we had a chance for this in 4G when LTE had specified device-to-device communications, but that never came about. I think something about taking the network infrastructure out of the communications link just didn't really spur much commercial funding in that area. And so it never got implemented. We'll see now if it will happen in 5G, but for sure, I think it's getting closer and probably if it is, then there will be more capabilities that will be developed under 6G. So I think these two use cases are going to be hot for 6G. And I think in 6G, if we get started in 5G, then we'll have to extend its capabilities. For example, higher data rates, higher reliability, lower latency, or even just improving security. So there's a lot of work to do in these two hot use cases.
I think I would build on that too, because Raymond's focus with the government entities is directly with them. But as an extension of sort of the civilian side, there's even other things that we expect 6G to enable. And so Raymond already mentioned sort of the emergency response, first responder situation, dealing with systems that might be down or systems that might become overloaded, depending on natural disasters or other issues that pop up. And I think, you know, that's a pretty important area for government to be directly involved. And standardizing how that gets used within governments has started as far back as the LTE days. But, you know, 6G offers a potential of a much more integrated system with how society works. Another area is that in most places, education is managed by the government. And the education process, I think, could stand an overhaul in using the mobile communications combined with the computing and the sensing to facilitate more education, better remote education, leveraging remote expertise into organizations, and even remote interaction with the way that communications would work. And then another area is just managing various metropolitan issues or regional issues. That's traffic flow, that's parking, it's the flow of energy or any other utility like water management or anything else. And the development of real-time communications with computing that's highly integrated with what we're doing from a societal standpoint would allow governments to become much more efficient in terms of how they manage these precious resources, which are, you know, pretty critical to our long-term success. So I think those are a few other areas that I think we could expect a much more pervasive use.
I just wanted to add one more thing from a civilian or commercial viewpoint. I believe that higher degrees of realism of virtual reality and remote telepresence will be enabled in 6G. And, you know, with COVID era pushing things like remote meetings, I see this being an important use case really for everyone, for all different kinds of occasions, whether it be, you know, children's birthday parties or even governmental use. So I'm personally kind of excited about that aspect of this.
Great.
Earlier, Roger talked about 6G spectrum. How do you guys see the spectrum can be divided up between government and the industry for 6G spectrum?
Yeah, so I'll start with this. There is always a tension between government use and, I guess I'd say, commercial or civilian use of spectrum, just like there's tension with any sort of spectrum use, because it's a pretty precious resource these days, given the pervasive use of radio technology from low frequencies all the way up to much higher ones. So, you know, what you see within the U.S. is duplicated in pretty much most other places, where in the U.S. you've got the NTIA that manages the federal use of spectrum, and you have the FCC that manages the commercial use of spectrum. And there's often tension between the two organizations as you see one pushing for more use in another space. And I would say that there will always be spectrum that the government must reserve for itself for various reasons. And some of those are obvious, like national security, and some of them are not so obvious. And I think the ongoing work to optimize that for both sides is going to be an essential part. You know, right now there's conversations about adding, you know, sub terahertz spectrum to the portfolio of use for, you know, the 6G space. And right now, there's not a lot of regulation associated with the territory above 100 gigahertz. That's only just begun. So maybe that's a little bit green field, but there are other forms of research that use that spectrum right now, notably radio astronomy. And so there will be some tension there. But also Earth observation. And Earth observation satellite is a critical part of such fundamental things as analyzing the weather. And so that's becoming a more and more critical thing for us to do. And so that coexistence is going to become a major issue and just needs to be openly addressed in sensible ways so that that's usable. And we've even seen recently spectrum get freed up by the NTIA for use of the FCC. And I think that's happening in other regions as well. I guess another great example is the FR2 space in 5G. So from 24 to 71 gigahertz, virtually all of that in China, for example, is managed directly by the government and, in fact, the military. And so I'm sure, I don't know much details there, but I'm sure there's conflict between different branches of government, even in China, about how that's going to be used and whether parts of it are going to be freed up for commercial use as FR2 and the use of FR2 expands. So that just continues to be an ongoing discussion and a critical way to make the trade-offs between what these different use models are going to require. And I know Raymond's in the middle of a lot of coexistence issues where there's much more direct conflict in terms of government and commercial use of the spectrum, you know, radar versus communication, for example. And I'll let him talk more about that because that's an even more interesting space.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is actually Ofcom, who is the frequency regulator in the UK, is already working on this problem of divvying up spectrum. And they put out some requests for feedback by the public about how to allocate the 100 to 200 gigahertz. And what they're going to do is actually allocate this three bands of spectrum in the 100 to 200 gigahertz range that is currently used for Earth exploration satellite services to collect weather and climate data. What they're going to do is they're going to license this spectrum for terrestrial use for 6G innovation. So that will be one of the limitations of this, which is it has to be for terrestrial use. And they intend to introduce new provisions on an as-needed basis. So what they're really doing is the sharing of spectrum is going to be discriminated by essentially position or location, one terrestrial and one non-terrestrial. And so they believe that there won't be any coexistence issues here. But we're also seeing, even starting now, the push for more cognitive technologies, which is sort of adaptive technologies. What that means is it's something that can sense the environment and whatever signals are out there. And when it senses that there's a coexistence condition, can adapt as necessary to one or both of the communication systems so that they're not interfering with each other. So in this way, divvying up the spectrum is not so much of an issue as technology becomes the traffic cop that manages the shared resource of spectrum. So there are a few different ways to skin this cat of divvying up spectrum between government and industry.
Great. Well, I imagine there may be some technologists out there who are a little wary of the government's role in technology development, but why is it critical for the industry leaders to work together with government agencies like the FCC to regulate research on emerging technologies?
So regulatory bodies have an important role to make sense of the quote-unquote jungle of frequencies and to coordinate the usage of this jungle, define the correct usage, and enforce the correct usage. That's a big task and an important role. More and more so, critical infrastructure are utilizing wireless signals and wireless communications technologies. And with that comes the possibility of someone disrupting operation of critical infrastructure, whether nefariously or unintentionally. The regulatory agencies have responsibility over the entire spectrum and the entire needs of the spectrum, while industry leaders are probably focused on one particular usage or service of the spectrum, for example, like 6G. So the regulatory agencies have to work together with all the different individual standards bodies and industries and companies to define these frequency ranges of operation.
I agree. You know, the government's in the best position to be the body to make the determination about how the spectrum is going to be used, right? You can make whatever jokes you want about how governments behave, but, you know, that is the responsibility, right? It's a resource that's managed by the government by definition. And there have been regulations based on how this resource gets used since, you know, the early part of the 20th century. And so nothing new, right? And I think it's super important that smart decisions get made, and these folks are going to have to work through all of that.
Roger, you were recently appointed to the Technological Advisory Council for the Federal Communication Commission. Can you talk about your role on the FCC and a little more about why you think it is important to have someone from the test and measurement community on the FCC?
Yeah, thank you. You know, the opportunity to be part of the FCC Technical Advisory Council is pretty cool. I'm very excited about that. It is paying attention to what happens at the policy level as it relates to technology is something that has intrigued me for the last several years since I started working on 5G. So this is a great opportunity, and it's really quite an honor because the 50 or so people that are part of that Technical Advisory Council it's a pretty impressive group of people. I'm fairly humbled to be selected to be part of that. And they do represent many parts of the industry, parts of academia, and then also various consortia that work through issues as they relate to primarily spectrum, but not exclusively. So the FCC Technical Advisory Council has four working groups. One is focused on 6G specifically. The one is focused on the use of artificial intelligence. Another focused on advanced spectrum sharing. And then the last is really more of a catch-all of multiple new technologies that would be directly applicable to issues that the FCC has to address. And the FCC, because it's a government body, is almost more political than it is technical, but they have to make decisions in a technical context. And so having representatives from the industry to provide perspective and technical background for what goes on really augments what the FCC already does. They employ a bunch of engineers that all do a lot of great technical work. There's a chief technical office there as well. But this is at least the opportunity for spokespeople and subject matter experts in the industry and academia to provide the technical perspective that comes from, you know, trying to make this operate in the real world, for that all to get woven together for the critical decisions that the FCC has to make in terms of how communications are managed. Now, a big part of that is spectrum, but it is by no means exclusive to spectrum. And so my role is just part of that. I am, we in Keysight are members of both the 6G working group and the artificial intelligence working group. And then within the 6G working group, they've asked me to be the facilitator for work on spectrum needs and advanced spectrum technology for the sake of 6G. And that means coordinating with the advanced spectrum sharing work group, which is a, you know, that's one of the big four work groups. This thing I just mentioned is a sub working group. But the advanced spectrum sharing working group goes beyond 6G. It's right spectrum sharing for pretty much everything that is going to use the spectrum, and providing technical advice for the FCC in that context. And most of what the group does is study what's going on in the industry, bring in external experts to comment on various topics, and then creating reports which are aimed primarily at the FCC commissioners themselves and the technical body running their technical work, that consolidate that expertise and the perspective and insight of what we see happening now and what we anticipate over the next few years. The council's been active for over a couple of decades based on an act of Congress way back when. And this is the second session of the council that Keysight has been part of. And so I'm very happy to be part of that.
Well, that's terrific, Roger. Congratulations on that. The vision for 6G is very ambitious, and it could enable more efficient government infrastructures. How does that change the role of government agencies in 6G ecosystem versus previous generations of technology?
Well, I think like what's happening now, the government, which has to make decisions in a political context, needs to embrace where the technology is headed. I think one of the biggest challenges that governments always have is that policy always lags technology, always, always. And sometimes for good reasons, right? Democracies are messy, but it's the best mess we know of in terms of running governments. And they don't move fast necessarily, and they don't move fast for good reason. So whereas technology does. And so this responsibility of the government agencies of being up to date on the technology, being cognizant, are super critical. And it's not just spectrum and, you know, technology policy and research funding and that kind of thing, but, you know, a clear space is in security. And I think the regulatory bodies need to really lean in on cybersecurity as the threat surface from a cybersecurity standpoint gets so much larger based on a much more pervasive use of mobile communications. I think that's a pretty key area where any government, ours, anybody's, really kind of needs to lean in to provide the security, trustworthiness, privacy, and so forth for the civilian body.
This is an interesting question because it does seem like 5G was quite a large evolution from 4G, and 6G probably even more so from 5G. And in 5G, what we saw was 5G wasn't just a faster phone or a phone to watch higher resolution video, but it's going into various application areas and use cases. For example, 5G low latency networks for telerobotic surgery. So there's so many use cases for 5G, and I can only think that with 6G, with, you know, such high sub-terahertz frequency bands, such high bandwidths, lower latencies, et cetera, that the use cases would be more and would enable much more control of critical infrastructure. And so I would think that it would have to change the way that government works, because so much of this is going to be impacted by 6G. I don't really know how or what that would look like, but I think the question is a good one that probably we will have to all witness and work out in the next decade or so.
Okay, great.
When we were in 4G days, 2 gigahertz was about the highest frequency range of operation. And all of a sudden in 5G, they introduced 28 and 39 gigahertz all in one fell swoop. So companies were coming to Keysight to help them to understand the propagation at such high frequencies and measure the propagation. I see the same thing happening, all of a sudden introducing sub-terahertz in 6G, which is really, they say sub-terahertz, it's really several hundreds of gigahertz. And so one of the key things is going to be channel sounding, as it was in 5G, which is to say, understanding the channel and how the propagation at such high frequencies works. This is really one of the most fundamental measurements to get started with. And so at Keysight, at our WCNC demo booth, you'll see one of our test beds for performing channel sounding measurements at sub-terahertz.
Okay, great. Another thing to look forward to at WCNC.
Exactly. All right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our guests, Roger and Raymond, for joining us. Thanks for being here, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks. It's thank a pleasure. Appreciate the opportunity, Dylan.
And we're back. So, Aaron, I don't know about you. I found that very interesting. On one hand, it's fascinating to see how much of an interest governments around the world are taking in the development of 6G. But on the other hand, when you think about the power, pervasiveness, and importance of wireless communications, it makes a lot of sense that governments want to be on the ground floor.
To me, the most interesting part is about 6G applications. To me, we are still figuring out what applications we can use with 5G networks. We are slowly figuring that out. And it's fascinating to hear that we already have plans and ambitions for 6G application.
Oh, yes, definitely. The vision for 6G is absolutely mind-blowing, and there's no shortage of applications being tossed around, even as the technology is just getting defined. But sadly, I think we've come to the end of another episode. So let's go ahead and thank our guests once again, Roger Nichols, Raymond Shen, and Ben Kofin. Thanks again to Aaron Lee for filling in as my co-pilot on this episode. And of course, thanks to every one of you out there for listening to this podcast.
Another reminder to go to All Things 5G webpage, www.keysight.com/find/AllThings5G for more information. And you can subscribe to All Things 5G via iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And watch for our WCNC recap episode featuring Ben Kofin and interviews from the show floor in late April.
Until next time, this is All Things 5G signing off.